flown. I have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
On the Black Ball Ferry Line up in Seattle, where the sunshine seldom shines, up in Seattle, all the whistles go and the bells go. And the ferry boats are chugging right along, right along.
All the people love to ride the Blue Pacific on the Black Ball Ferry Line, to be specific.
While the whistles go and the bells go,
and the ferry boats are chugging right along, right along.
Up on the upper deck, the view is great by heck. You love your Galapec and you're in clover. And when the whistles blow, you hate to go below,
cause that's the signal that the fun is nearly over.
On the Black Ball Ferry Line up in Seattle, every single GOP and Democrat will hear those whistles go and the bells go, as the ferry boats are chugging right along,
right along,
right along,
right along. Get aboard when the weather's fine. Take your pick of the ferries on the Black Ball Line.
There's the Illihee and the Chippewa
and the Killiute, the Kalakala.
You'll find all these on the Black Ball Line.
The Klahani,
the Nisqually,
there's the Malahat.
Well, think of that.
The Klingitat.
There goes my hat.
The S.S. City of Sacramento.
What are we doing down in California?
On the Black Ball Ferry Line, to be specific, while the whistles go and the bells go and the ferry boats are chugging right along,
right along,
right along,
right along. Down in the engine room, the boilers hum a tune, they're singing love and boom with deep emotion.
And on the deck above, each happy pair in love is holding hands and dreaming that they own the ocean.
On the Black Ball Ferry Line up in Seattle, every single GOP and Democrat will hear the whistles go and the bells go,
and the ferry boats are chugging right along,
right along,
right along,
right along. Oh, the ferry boats are chugging, lugging, lugging.
All the ferry boats are chugging, chugging.
Ferry boats are chugging, chugging along.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. Hope you're all having a fantastic weekend. Tonight, we begin with a wonderful episode of The Whistler, The House on Helmsley Boulevard. And then we give you a little bit of comedy with William Bendix and the great actor Burt Lancaster. We conclude with a really frightening episode of Inner Sanctum, Terror by Night. If you have any questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to Bruce at radiomasterpieces.com, and I'll be sure and answer you. Thank you so much for tuning in, and now let's enjoy our delicious mysteries.
The House on Helmsley Boulevard.
The old Hackett place on Helmsley Boulevard was a monument to the past. built by the very first of the Hacketts to arrive in California a good many years before. It clung now to its former grandeur with a sort of quiet, determined tenacity. But one evening shortly after midnight, the quiet of the neighborhood was suddenly shattered, the air torn with a startling cry.
Fire! Fire!
Yes, the cry of fire knifing through the stillness of tree-lined Hainesley Boulevard. The old house threatened as flames leaped to envelop it, and immediately the street was alive with activity. And miraculously, coming swiftly to the rescue, a fire engine, its crew working skillfully, fighting off the threat of destruction. And then out of the crowd, a man appeared.
Mr. Hackett, the house is safe.
Yeah, I see.
No one in there, is there, Mr. Hackett? Your Aunt Leona away?
Oh, she's away, thank heaven. Spending the night in Glendale. How did it happen, Lieutenant Mullen? How did it start?
I don't know. I went past about half an hour ago, going on duty.
I know. Aunt Leona will be grateful to you, Lieutenant.
Oh, forget it. Funny thing, though, Mr. Hackett. Thought I saw somebody running away from the place.
What?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'll see you later, Mr. Hackett.
Sure. And thanks, Mullen. I'd have been sick if anything had happened to the old place.
You are sick inside, aren't you, Frank? Because your plan failed so completely. And even as you thank Police Lieutenant Mullen for his swift action, you inwardly curse yourself, forgetting that he passes this way regularly, and that only a matter of a half an hour destroyed your timing. And you have to have money soon. $5,000 to clear your gambling debt with Gino DeCosta, or the payoff will be your life. Even with the damage very slight, the scene with Aunt Leona the next morning is an unpleasant one, as she surveys the scorched section at the rear of the old place.
Disgraceful.
Oh, there's very little damage, Aunt Leona.
It isn't the extent of the damage. It's your carelessness that disturbs me. I've left you everything I have in my will, and all I ask in return is that you assume some responsibility and make things easier for me while I'm still here.
Look, Aunt Leona, it could have been much worse. You worry yourself sick over this house.
It's my home, isn't it?
It's my home, too, Aunt Leona. Half mine, half yours, according to Kathy's will.
And it'll be all yours when I die, along with everything else I have. But I'm not dead yet, Frank.
Just the same, we ought to accept Mr. Fleming's offer to buy, if you ask me.
No one's asking you.
The old argument sounds even more hollow than usual, doesn't it, Frank? You're not getting anywhere with Aunt Leona, and you wish she were out of your way. You can't help thinking how pleasant your situation would be if something happened to her. You'd have everything you wanted. You could square yourself with Dino and have all you'd ever need besides. And there isn't much time, is there, Frank? Dino's given you 10 days. You can't stall much longer. Later that day, you seek out the only solace these last few months have offered. Adele Richards. Lovely. Beautiful. You could marry her if you could support her. Couldn't you, Frank?
She's a stubborn old woman. Fleming's outfit has bought up most of the other houses along the street, but she won't sell. She's going to put up an office building eventually. You
probably want to sell that.
Sure, when it's too late. Old Cappy had the right idea.
Cappy?
Captain Hackett, Aunt Leona's husband.
Oh.
He up and left about 8 years ago. Went out one night for some pipe tobacco. So he said. Never came back. I don't blame him. But then he had some money. He could afford to run. I can't.
You want to run, Cappy?
From her and from that infernal old house, yes. You, darling. Never.
Oh, Frank.
Oh, great. Don't answer.
Silly, I have to.
Hello? Oh, yes. Yes, he's here. I'll call him. It's for you, Frank. It's me, the cop. No, not you.
Okay. Hello, Dino.
I thought I might catch you with your girlfriend. I was reading the papers, Frank. That was a dumb thing to do.
What was?
Setting fire to your house. You're nuts.
No. No, Dino, you're wrong. I didn't do it.
Sure you did, and it didn't work. Just wanted you to know that that bum angle, Frank, I don't like it.
What difference does it make to you what I do to settle with you?
I don't like strings on anything that's mine. $5,000 you owe me. I want it on time, but I want it clean. Remember that, Frank.
Hello? Hello?
Frank, what is it?
Nothing.
Frank.
I'm sorry, honey. I've got a lot on my mind.
Something to do with gambling and Dino DeCosta, that's obvious. What is it?
It's... Well, might as well know. I'm into Dino for $5,000.
Frank.
I've got to get hold of the money some way.
Well, Frank, why don't you go to your aunt? Tell her everything.
She'll blow her stack. You don't know Aunt Leona, Adele. If I did that, she'd cut me out of her will, everything. No. I'll have to get the money for Dino some other way.
Yes, Frank, some other way. The time is short, very short. It's ironic, isn't it? Old Hackett House isn't worth much to anybody except Aunt Leona and Mr. Fleming, who wants very much to buy it. You could settle your debt with Dino if she'd agree to take Mr. Fleming's offer. That night after Leona retires, you're groping for a solution when the phone rings.
Hello.
Mr. Hackett, John Fleming.
Oh, yes, Mr. Fleming.
Hope it's not too late to bother you, but about the house, have you talked it out with your aunt?
Why, no. That is, I have talked to her, Mr. Fleming, and, well, she's weakening, but...
Nothing definite yet, though. Nothing settled, eh?
Well, no. Well, you know how it is. Living there so long, she's pretty attached to the place.
I know, but we can't solve this thing indefinitely. I wish you'd get a decision soon.
Oh, I will, sir. Very soon. And it's going to be a favorable one, I'm sure. She is weakening.
Good. We'll talk again soon, then, eh?
You wish it were true, don't you, Frank? But there was even a slight sign of Aunt Leona weakening in her stand against selling the house. The next morning, you decide to bring the subject up once more. When, as you step out into the yard, you hear voices raised angrily. Aunt Leona's voice, and the voice of old Bosun Pete, an old friend, former shipmate of Captain Hackett, who now does odd jobs about the place.
Goodness, my rose bed, my favorite rose bed. And what did you do? Neglect it? Ignore it?
Oh, the soil's been worked to death there, Miss Hackett. Best thing to do is rip all them prickly old scrags out of there.
Don't you dare talk that way about my roses.
Your roses, your house. Did you ever think of anything of anybody else's? Like my patience? It wears mighty thin around you, Miss. I want to tell you right here.
Now, look here, Bosun. If you don't enjoy the way I do things, you don't have to stay around, you know.
All right. I will quit, and with pleasure. Goodbye to you, Miss Leona.
Oh, fool.
Aunt Leona.
Oh, Frank. Well, I suppose you heard.
Who didn't? Well, the neighbors must have heard you, too. Aunt Leona, you can't send that old gent away.
Can't I?
Cap Hackett said he was to have a place here as long as he wished it.
Captain Hackett's been gone over 7 years, Frank. I'd say that makes him legally dead. And dead people don't dictate to me. Nor live ones either.
Something in Aunt Leona's manner has suddenly set you to wondering. Wondering if the rose bed might hold a grim secret of your aunt. Perhaps even the secret of her husband's strange disappearance. And you determine to find out. At dinner that night, you ask her an important question.
This weekend, Aunt Leona, going to Glendale as usual? Cousin Ellie?
Thought I might. Why?
Well, nothing. Just wondered.
If I do go, I hope I can trust you to remain in the premises and look after the place better than last time.
Oh, of course you can, Aunt Leona. I'll look after the place. very well this time. It's a hunch, isn't it, Frank? A growing belief. And quite possibly something that will help you considerably in your contest with Aunt Leona. It's far more than a test of individual wills, isn't it, Frank? The days are slipping by, and Dino DaCosta will collect your gambling debt with him one way or another. And now with your aunt spending the weekend in Glendale, giving you some time alone on the premises, another more promising thought has entered your head. That's why you set to work as soon as she's gone. Set to work digging into the rose bed. Digging deep. But all your efforts avail you exactly nothing. Only a ruined flower bed. And at work the following Monday, you get the angry phone call you expected.
Frank? Frank, how could you? How could you allow that terrible man to take his revenge this way?
Terrible man?
Bolton Pete. He stuck up my rose bed, ruined it for good. And you let him do it, you, when you said you'd watch the place.
Well, I'm sorry, Aunt Leona. I only left for a short time. I had no idea that Bolton would do such a thing.
I'm going to get the police on him. Lieutenant Mullen. I'll report him to Lieutenant Mullen.
That evening, as you sit on the front porch of Hackett House with Aunt Leona, you're a little hesitant to bring up the matter of Mr. Fleming's offer, aren't you, Frank? Yes, because you know she's still upset about the rose bed. You're sitting back, puffing on a cigarette, trying to think of some way you could ease into the subject when...
Someone's coming up the path, Frank.
Hmm? Oh, yeah. Looks like Bolton.
Bolton? Well, I've got something to say to him.
Now, take it easy, Aunt Leona. See from the looks of that walkie, he's had a few beers.
Hello, Frank. Miss Leona.
Well, you have a nerve coming back, showing your face around here after what you've done.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about your tearing up my rose bed.
Me? I didn't have nothing to do with them rose beds. I just come for my money.
Your money? What money?
You know what money. Long before Cappy went away, he said I should have part of his money when he died.
Oh? Did he tell you that?
He told you too, and you know it.
Really? I don't seem to recall.
Listen, Miss Leone, I'm warning you. I better get my money or you'll be sorry.
Are you threatening me?
Well, call her what you want. I'll get my money if I have to choke it out of you.
Come on, Bolton. Let's take a walk.
Don't let go, Frank. I ain't finished here yet.
Yes, you are. Yes. Come on.
You lead him away, Frank. The Bolton shouting threats. Walk him down the street for several blocks to calm him down. Then you leave him. You feel sorry for the Bolton, don't you? But as you turn, start back for the house. He's quickly forgotten. You have other things in your mind. Dino, Aunt Leona, Adele. You haven't seen her in days, have you? Then as you reach the crest of the hill, sight Hackett House silhouetted against the sky, you stop. Suddenly an idea hits you.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Sure. Why didn't I think of that before? Aunt Leona! Aunt Leona?
And listen,
Frank. Oh.
I'll fix me a cup of tea.
No, thanks. Look, I just got an idea, Aunt Leona. Cappy left you several lots up in Glendale, didn't he? Not far from Cousin Ellie's place?
Yes, that's right.
Aunt Leona, why couldn't we have the house move there? Just have it picked up all the way.
Move?
To the lots in Glendale. Why not, Aunt Leona? Why not?
Why not, indeed? It'd be nice being close to Ellie.
Sure it would.
But wait. Wouldn't it cost a bit of money?
Oh, I don't know. Look, let me talk to Fleming.
Now, don't rush me into this, Frank. I want some time to think it over.
Okay, you think it over. But I've got another idea. And I'm going to see Fleming about it first thing in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Aunt Leona, I talked to Mr. Fleming this morning, and he called me back a few minutes ago. His company is willing to move the house for it, stand all the expense.
Oh, really, sir?
How about it? Do I tell him it's a deal?
Well, all right, sir. All right.
Good. Now listen, they're anxious to get on this thing right away, so you'd better scout around, see if you can find us another place to live for the time being.
There's a cottage just down the corner from here and up the street. It's for rent. I saw it this morning.
Check on it right away. I'll see you tonight, Aunt Leona.
Hello?
Hello, darling.
Frank, where on earth have you been?
Well, it's a long story, but I'll be...
Through talking, Frank.
Well, go on, darling. But you're wrong.
I'll...
You hear me? Hang up.
I'll call you later, Adele.
But Frank!
Later, Adele. All right. What's the idea, Dino?
Came to call, that's the idea. Was in your neighborhood, as the saying goes, and decided to drop in.
You're not the social type, Dino.
No, I ain't. So we won't visit very long. 5 more days, Frank. Why, you keep the score, too.
I know. And it looks good, Dino.
I'm not so sure. 5 days, Frank. That's all the time you got. I need to do myself bad. 5 days. It's gotta be.
I'll try, Dino, but I can't...
I'd do that, Frank, if I were you. Just as if your life depended on it.
Dino means business, doesn't he, Frank? 5 more days, and that's all. Somehow you managed to move yourself and Aunt Leona to the little cottage not far from Hackett House in 2 days' time. And then you go to Mr. Fleming's office to press for payment for your property.
So, any time your company wants to start moving the house is fine with us.
Good, my boy, good. I'll file for the moving permit right away. Sometimes there are little delays in getting it, and sometimes not. But we'll move the house as soon as we get the permit.
Well, as a matter of fact, Mr. Fleming, when you move the house is of no importance to me. I don't even want to hear about Hackett House until it's safely planted on those lots in Glendale. Well, about the money for the property. Since Aunt Leona and I own the property jointly, can we each receive a check for half the total amount?
Perfectly agreeable with us, and I should say... If there's some rush about it, our accounting department could get the checks out for you right away.
Oh, fine, Mr. Fleming, fine. There is some rush about it.
It's a relief, isn't it, Frank? You leave Fleming's office fortified with 2 checks. One made out to Aunt Leona for her half. The other to you for exactly the amount you must pay Dino DaCosta. $5,000, your half, all for Dino. You're glad you have the money for Dino, but after you pay him, you'll be no better off than you were before. And now you know you'll never be, unless something happens to your Aunt Leona. As you walk along the busy downtown street, you suddenly see an old friend right in front of you.
Well, Bolson, how are you?
Oh, hello, Frank. Well, look, I've been wanting to get in touch with you. I wanted to, well, ask Miss Leone to forgive me for the other night.
Oh, forget it.
I didn't mean to say all those things, but, well, I kind of needed the money.
Oh? Things pretty tough?
Yeah, pretty tough.
See what I can do, Bolson.
Oh, would you, Frank? You know I didn't mean to harm her or nothing like that.
Where are you staying?
At Seaman's Hotel.
I'll get in touch.
You watch Bolson as he turns away, disappears into the noonday crowd. Now you know what you're going to do, don't you, Frank? The Bolson is your answer. Soon you'll have everything you want, including a job. Yes. Bolson Pete has given the solution, hasn't he? That night, a little after midnight, you make it a point to run into another old friend, Lieutenant Mullen of the police department, on his way to work. And as the two of you stand and chat on the street corner, you manage to steer the conversation in the direction you wanted to go.
Yeah, I was beginning to wonder about Bolson. Haven't seen him in the neighborhood for some time.
Well, he's living downtown now, I understand.
Heard he had a run-in with your aunt, is that right? About the rose bed?
Yeah. What a session it was. He'd been drinking. Well, I really don't think he meant what he said. Threatening her, you know.
Really?
Still, you can't be too sure. He's got quite a temper. And a gun.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But I don't think you have to worry too much about the bosun. Oh, here comes my streetcar. I'll see you later, Mr. Hackett. Good night.
Night, Lieutenant.
You're pleased, aren't you, Frank? Satisfied with your meeting with Lieutenant Mullen. The following afternoon, you phone the Siemens Hotel. Ask Bosun to pick you up that night. Drive you out to the cottage. You've made a decision, haven't you, Frank? Set your plan into motion. Your debt with Dino will be settled. And when it's all over, you won't have to share the money from the sale of Hackett House with anyone. And you'll have all your Aunt Leona's money besides. Late that night, you're waiting on a quiet side street for Bosun to pick you up. And finally, he rounds the corner and pulls up at the curb.
Hello, Frank.
Right on time, Bosun.
Yeah.
Shouldn't want to keep Leona waiting, you know.
Sure she'll be up this late? Seems like a funny time of night.
Oh, you're wrong, Bosun. The time's perfect. Just perfect for this.
Later, you're parked in front of the cottage, and you're wearing Bosun's pea jacket and cap. Bosun is out of sight, slumped down on the seat beside you, still unconscious. You glance at your watch, then slip out of the car and hurry quietly up to the porch of the cottage to wait. It'll all be over soon, won't it, Frank? Once you get away, you'll wreck the car. Bosun will be killed, and the murder weapon will be found in his pocket. You glance at your watch again. A little after 12, and down the street. And you see him approaching right on schedule. It's Lieutenant Mullen.
Yes? Who is it?
It's Frank.
Well, Frank, did you forget your key? What in the world are you doing in the bosun's cap? What?
As your Aunt Leona slumps to the floor, you whirl, run back to the car, jump inside. Through the rearview mirror, you can see Lieutenant Mullen running towards you. And as you put the car in gear, you let the bosun's cap fall to the street.
Bye-bye, Lieutenant. And thanks. Thanks for being right on time.
A crowd had gathered in the usually quiet side street on the fringe of downtown Los Angeles. Spoke in excited whispers, stared at the body on the sidewalk. A few feet away, Lieutenant Mullen stood by, puffing slowly on a cigarette, and his face wore a puzzled frown. Then another officer pushed his way through the crowd and joined him.
This one dead, Lieutenant?
Yeah. Name was Frank Hackett.
You killed your lady back there at the cottage?
Uh-huh. Tried to make it look like Bosun did it.
Bosun?
The man over there in the airship. How's he doing?
Oh, he's finally coming around. How'd you nail this Hackett fellow?
Saw him run out of the cottage his aunt had rented after I heard the shots. Thought at first it was Bosun the way he was dressed. I took off after him. I never caught him either, except that after he turned the corner, he had to abandon the car and go it on foot. That's when my bullet nailed him.
Something go wrong with his car?
No, the street was blocked.
Blocked?
Yeah. The movers were hauling a house away. It blocked the whole street. Hackett here couldn't drive the car around it. Funny thing, too. It was his home they were moving. Hackett House.
Remember to take the journey on Sunday nights at 10 p.m. to midnight with Musical Star Streams, hosted by Forrest. each week brings a new two-hour episode of Exotic Electronica. It follows Radio Masterpieces, which airs at 9 p.m. on Valley 104.9, your community station. And thanks for listening to Valley 104.9.
We're through shooting for today, Bert.
Whew. Okay, Norman. Boy, I'll sure be glad when this picture's finished. I'm getting shell-shocked from the noise.
Oh, Bert. Bert Lancaster.
Here I am, Harold.
Bert, here's the props you asked for. A Tommy gun, a sawed-off shotgun, and a Luger pistol.
Thanks.
What do you want them for, anyway?
Oh, I'm doing a comedy act for a benefit show tonight. We need some props.
Well, I can send them over to the theater for
you. No, I'll take them with me in my car. I've got to go down there now for rehearsal anyway. Thanks, Harold. I'll see you tomorrow.
Good night.
Sit down, Riley. The next bus won't be for 20 minutes.
Yeah, well, I ain't waiting that long. I'm getting a lift. Come on, Gillis.
Oh, no, not me. I ain't hitchhiking.
Why not?
Not with no pay envelope in my pocket. I don't want to get held up.
Come on, who's going to hold you up?
That's how they operate now. They give you lifts. What's the matter? Don't you read the papers? Like this here blonde bandit.
You mean a dame?
Yeah. And what a dame. Gorgeous. A face like an angel and a figure like... It should only happen to my wife.
Well, what's this dame do?
What, you're waiting for a lift, see?
Yeah, yeah.
Along comes this here beautiful blonde in a snazzy convertible.
Yeah.
She smiles at you, you smile back. She winks at you, you wink back. She opens the door, you get in, and off you go.
Then what?
First thing you know, you're driving home the long way. Through Mulholland Drive.
Why?
You find that out when she stops the car in a lonely spot. She snuggles up to you, puts her arms around you, kisses you, and strokes your temple.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Only she's stroking it with the muzzle of a .45. Goodbye pay envelope. And believe me, it could happen to you.
No, not me. I'd never be that lucky. Yeah. Oh, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm going to get a lift.
I'm waiting for the next bus.
Okay, so long.
So long.
Hey, lift. Maybe the next one. Hey, a lift, mister?
Sure, hop in.
Oh, thanks, mister.
Where are you going?
Blueview Terrace.
Oh, really? I go right by there.
Oh, that's great. My name is Riley.
Hi, Riley.
You know, your face looks familiar. I've seen you somewhere before.
It's possible.
What line of work are you in?
I'm in the movies.
With that face, who are you trying to kid?
Look, fella, I'm not kidding.
Well, okay, if you don't want to tell me, that's your business. You must be doing pretty good, though, to afford a convertible like this.
Well, I do okay. Say, you got enough room for your feet there? If that thing on the floor is in your way, I'll
what
move
thing?
It for
you. Oh, you mean this here Tommy gun? No, that don't bother. Tommy gun.
Yeah, I've got a job to do tonight, and I need it.
Tommy gun and a convertible. You're the blonde bandit.
What?
Don't kiss me. I'm married. I thought you were a girl. Stop the car.
Listen, this gun is only.
Don't shoot, please. Here's my wallet. It's got my pay envelope in it. Take it. Only don't shoot. Please, I'm too young to die. Let me go.
Hey, wait, you. Come back here. What a jerk. I better find out who he is. Maybe he's got his name in his wallet. Oh, here's his business card. Chester A. Riley, Riveter. Office hours, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Sundays by appointment only. Holy smoke, this jerk is a nut.
Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Tell Tell me, have you ever been alone with fear? Alone in the night and frightened? Well, here's Ann Shepherd in the role of Linda Dixon to tell us what happened to her.
It was a Friday night, and I think I was already a little nervous as I drove north into the mountains. It was the first day of my vacation. I started from the city early enough to arrive before nightfall, but my car was 6 years old and developed motor trouble. So now I was driving through the night with 50 miles more to go, and I was tired and nervous and irritated. And then I heard that siren in the distance. At first, I couldn't place it. And then I remembered the state prison was somewhere in the vicinity. The siren. That meant a prisoner had escaped. I reached over and turned on the radio. They were broadcasting an alarm.
I repeat, motorists are warned to be on the lookout for Lee Hartley, who escaped from the death cell at state prison at 9:15 p.m. He is 5'10", dark-haired, regular features, no distinguishing marks. Hartley is a confirmed killer. He is believed to be armed. Beware of Hartley. He would rather kill than eat. I'd better give you that again.
He would rather kill than eat. And that man was loose. I stared ahead at the lonely road spinning toward me through the windshield.
It has been established that Hartley was helped to escape from the outside by his sweetheart, Helen Hearn, a red-headed woman just as vicious as Hartley himself. It is thought that Hartley and the Hearn woman may have separated after the escape. All motorists are warned to beware of a dark-haired man and a red-haired woman, alone or together.
My hand was shaking a little as I turned off the radio. I looked in the car mirror and shivered. I, too, have red hair. There was a storm coming up, and I was driving into it. And the night was black, and I felt small and lonely and frightened in the car. Then I saw them in the mirror, the headlights sweeping up behind me. A car. It had come out of nowhere. It was pulling alongside, cutting me off. I cowered behind the wheel and then watched the door of that other car open. A man stepped out. Oh, I breathed a sigh of relief. It was a state trooper.
You guys are all alone, miss?
Oh, yes, officer.
Sorry if I scared you. We're stopping all cars. Where are you heading for, miss?
Oh, I'm going up to Seven Lakes Hotel. That's near Carstairs. You see, I started out late from the city, and I'm having motor trouble.
Yeah, sure. Can I see your driver's license, please?
My driver's license, of course. Here, I've got it somewhere in my purse. I seem to be all fingers. That escaped prisoner, Hartley.
How'd you know about him?
Oh, well, I heard the prison siren. Then it came over the radio about Hartley and his red-haired girlfriend.
Say, you've got red hair, too.
Well, you don't think I'm that woman.
Find that license yet?
Well, I'm sure it's in here. So many... Oh, here, I've got it. Here's my license.
Thanks. What time did you say you left the city?
About 5 o'clock.
Took you a long time to get this far.
Well, I told you I had motor trouble.
Oh, I sure did. Okay, Miss Dixon, here's your license. You can go ahead.
Thank you. Oh, darn. There it goes again.
More motor trouble.
No, it's the same thing the mechanic said it might have. There it started.
You want to get that fixed first chance you get?
Yeah. It's late, though. All the service stations are closed.
Yeah, there's one that's open all night about 2 miles up the road.
Oh?
You better stop there. Bill Slater's place. He's a good mechanic.
Yeah.
He'll fix you up. Tell him Joe Nesbitt sent you.
Christ, thanks. I will.
And listen, Miss Dixon.
Yeah.
You be careful. Don't stop to give anyone a lift, man nor woman.
Don't worry. I won't. The night closed in on me again, but I didn't feel quite so nervous. knowing that the trooper was somewhere behind me on the road, and Bill Slater's service station ahead. In a few minutes, I saw the lights on the service station. I swung into the open space in front of the pumps, and I stopped. There was a rumbling of thunder in the west. The storm was moving up fast. There was another car, a coupe, parked at the pump. But there wasn't anybody in it. And I didn't see any attendant around either. I pressed the horn button. No one answered. No one came out of the office. Still no response. Everything seemed so quiet and suddenly ominous. I found myself shivering. I had a curious feeling that someone was watching me. I've got to get away from here fast. It's starting to work again. It won't start. It won't start. For a long time, I sat behind the wheel, listening. Listening for the sound of footsteps stealing up behind the car. There were none. Then I could bear it no longer. I had to get out of the car. I had to see what was in that office. I opened the door of the car and stepped down on the gravel. Anybody in there? No answer. I clenched my fists and stepped inside. There on the floor at my feet lay the body of a man. His mechanic's jumper was stained red with blood, and his throat was cut from ear to ear. How long I stood there, I'll never know. I was petrified, unable to move, unable to take my eyes from the bloody body. What's that? Someone coming downstairs. Hartley? It must be Hartley, the killer. He must have been hiding somewhere upstairs. I've got to get away outside. But how? My car won't run. That other car, the coupe, I could jump into that. Yes. If I could reach that coupe before he comes down.
Anything wrong, sister?
Too late.
Anything I can do for you, sister?
Yes. It's my car. It won't start. I thought someone here might help me.
Sorry. There doesn't seem to be anybody around. That's my coupe over there. I stopped for gas and no one came out, so I went in and looked around.
Did you find anyone?
There isn't a living soul in there.
Oh.
You look kind of tired.
Oh, no, I'm all right.
My name is Taylor.
Oh?
John Taylor.
I'm Linda Dixon.
Linda Dixon, huh? Glad to know you. Traveling far tonight?
Well, I'm going to Carstairs. Seven Lakes Hotel. They're expecting me.
Now, what do you know about that?
What?
Carstairs is the town I'm heading for, too. Isn't that a coincidence?
Yes, I'm sure it is.
Your car won't run, huh? Tell you what, we'll put your baggage in my car and I'll give you a lift to Carstairs. You can send for your car in the morning.
Oh, no.
I'll have your bag switched in a jiffy.
Please, no, I would rather not.
There we are. All switched. Now, come on. Get in here.
He took my arm and helped me into the coupe. His hand was strong. His grip was hard. It hurt me.
There you are. Snug as a bug in a rug.
We drove away into the night, leaving behind us the dead man in the service station. a few minutes after we left that service station. We drove through sheets of rain. I sat stiff and tense beside the man who called himself John Taylor. He had both hands on the wheel, and he stared out through the windshield. My eyes focused on something on his right hand. It was a stain, a small stain, but it was wet and red. I couldn't take my eyes off it.
What are you looking at?
Well, oh, nothing. Nothing at all.
Think I'll turn on the radio. Did you know there's been a jailbreak?
Hartley is 5'10", very dark hair. Don't be fooled by his pleasant manner. He is a killer by instinct.
Take no chances with this man.
He is absolutely...
I looked at the man beside me.
Helen Hearn is a clever and dangerous woman. 5'3", red hair, very pretty.
I caught Taylor looking at me out of the corner of his eye. What are you looking at?
At your hair. It's red.
There was a streak of lightning, and looking out of the rain-swept window, I glimpsed a signpost. The lightning illuminated the sign, and my heart skipped a beat at what I saw. That sign we just passed.
What about it?
Well, it said Kerhonkson ahead. We're going the wrong way. We should be on the Carstairs Road, not on the Kerhonkson Road.
That's funny. Must have taken the wrong turn.
Well, aren't you going to turn back?
Sure. Whatever you say. We'll turn right around and go back. Uh-oh. We're in the ditch.
In the ditch?
That's no good. She won't budge. Well, it looks like we're stuck here for the night. You look scared.
Oh, no. I think I'd better get out and walk. Perhaps there's a house nearby.
Walk in this weather?
Oh, I don't mind the weather, really. I don't...
You can't walk in this storm?
Well, nevertheless, I'm going to try.
Not on your life.
What do you mean?
I'm staying right here till I get the car out of the ditch. You get pneumonia walking in this storm.
But I'm...
Let's see. Where's that flashlight? Ah, here we are. Got some tools in the trunk compartment. You stay put. Stay right where you are.
I heard him open the trunk in the back. I listened for further sounds, but there was nothing. I didn't hear him moving there. I didn't hear any tools. I had to find out what he was doing. Slowly, carefully, I got my door open. I stepped out into the rain and sneaked back toward the rear. I saw him there, not moving, in front of the open trunk compartment, bending over with a flashlight in his hand. The ray of light was focused on something curled up inside. It wasn't baggage or tools. It was a woman's body. Just then he saw me. He snapped the flashlight off, but not before I caught a glimpse of red hair. Then I must have fainted. When I came to, I found myself seated inside the car again. My face and hair were wet. My clothes were dripping. John Taylor was driving. His face as he stared ahead through the night was dark and bleak. The storm was over. Night was quiet.
Oh, so you're awake again.
I don't feel well.
Is it because of what's in the trunk compartment?
She's dead.
I told you not to get out of the car.
What are you going to do with me?
What do you think?
Please.
Sorry, sister. Got to take your medicine.
Oh, no.
Better not make any trouble. I'll try to make it as easy for you as I can.
say that when a person loses all hope, subconsciously he seeks refuge in sleep. That's what must have happened to me. I must have dozed, or perhaps I fainted, I don't know. But I awoke with a start at the sound of brakes. I sat up straight and saw that we stopped in front of a small fieldstone house. Why are we stopping here?
I'm out of gas.
Oh.
Come on. We're going in.
The sign on the door said Roger Bryce, M.D. A doctor's house. I began to feel a spark of hope. There might be a chance.
I'll do the talking. Is that clear?
Yes.
Where's the bell? Oh. Must be awake. There's a light in the parlor.
How do you do?
Good evening, Dr. Bryce.
Yes, can I help you?
I'm terribly sorry to disturb you, Doctor, but my sister and I were heading for Carstairs, and we seem to have gotten lost, and we're out of gas.
His sister? He was passing us off as brother and sister. Now I knew why he hadn't cut my throat as he had that service station man's. He was carrying me for protection. I was his passport through the police cordon. His sister.
I'm afraid I can't be of much help to you. I'm 7 miles from the nearest town, and I haven't any spare gasoline. Come in, won't you?
Why, yes, thank you, we will.
I wonder if I could offer you my hospitality for the night.
Oh, that would be imposing.
Not at all. I have 2 rooms that aren't being used.
Not really,
Oh, come. I insist.
I'd hoped for a chance to talk to Dr. Bryce alone. Just a word to warn him. But Taylor never left us alone for a minute. He insisted on coming into my room to make sure, he said, that it was comfortable enough for me. Then he took the doctor by the arm and went out with him.
Good night, sis, and sweet dreams.
I was alone, free of the presence of John Taylor. I had another lease on life. I waited, my heart pounding. Give them both a chance to retire. Then I slipped off my shoes, and in my stocking feet, I stole across the room and inched my door open. Slowly, carefully, I stepped out into the corridor and turned right toward the doctor's room.
What's the matter, sister? You weren't thinking of going anywhere, were you?
I wanted a drink of water.
A drink of water, huh? In case you didn't know it, there's a water pitcher on your dresser.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Good night, sister.
I turned around and went back into my room. It was no use. If I attempted to warn Dr. Bryce, Taylor would probably kill us both. I turned out the light in my room. I knew he was watching my transom. Then I lay down on the bed. How long I lay there, I don't know. Perhaps I slept, perhaps not. But I heard that slight creak as my door began to inch open. The blood chilled in my veins. Slowly, the door came open. I lay fascinated, unable to move. Vaguely, I saw the outline of the hand and the knife it held. I wanted to scream, but I couldn't. Slowly, he came toward the bed. Now he stands over me. He raises the knife. I screamed! I rolled over on the bed just as the knife slashed down. I rolled off the bed and cowered in a corner. That horrible figure came around the bed after me with a knife upraised. Help! Dr. Bryce, help me!
All right, you, Dr. Bryce, get it!
Hollow towers all in the corner. They fought all over the room in the dark. I had no strength. Move. To think. Not even to hope. All the life seemed to have gone dead in my veins. And then. And it was over. But who? Who had won? In the dark, I strained my eyes to see. There was a vague shape on the floor. And another, weaving around the room. Who? Which one was it? Doctor! Dr. Bryce! Is that you?
No, Linda. It isn't Dr. Bryce. It's I. John Taylor.
John Taylor. Standing there at the light switch. And on the floor lay Dr. Bryce unconscious. With a long gash in his head.
I had to hit him. With a water pitcher.
My eyes turned to Dr. Bryce. I saw the knife still gripped in his right hand.
That's Hartley, Linda. Lee Hartley, the killer.
It was he who came in here with a knife?
Right, I was down the cellar just now. The real Dr. Bryce is down there, dead. And this fellow posed as Bryce when we came to the house.
Then you're not Hartley.
No, isn't that rich? All the time you thought I was Lee Hartley, and I thought you were Helen Hearn. On account of your red hair.
But the red haired woman.
Oh, that's Helen Hearn. This fellow must have killed her back at the service station and stuffed her body in my trunk compartment while I was inside.
That all happened last summer. In time, I think I'll manage to forget that night of horror. But it won't be soon. Sometimes in the night I dream that I see that awful figure with the knife poised above my throat. And I wake up screaming. But then John takes me in his arms and holds me tight and tells me that everything's all right. You see, I'm Mrs. John Taylor now.
I said to my Uncle Sam, old man Taxes, here I am, and he was glad to see me. Mr. Small Fry, yes indeed, lower brackets, that's my speed, and he was glad to see me. I paid my income tax today. I never felt so proud before to be right there with millions more who paid their income tax today. I'm squared up with the USA. You see those bombers in the sky? Rockefeller helped to build them, so did I. I paid my income tax today.
I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.